Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on concerns about the rising cost of living in Hong Kong and the widening gap between the city's rich and poor.
But what we have is one in three seniors. It's one in four, one in five students, children that are living below the poverty line, that are struggling to get three healthy, nutritious meals a day.
Then we will tell you about a young Kurdish man who has found an unusual way to help the threatened people of Kobani, Syria. Instead of a gun, he uses a paintbrush.
The fighter takes up arms to protect people. The writers, they write articles and poetry. And we help by painting for our people.
Helping the poor of Hong Kong and helping Syrians under attack by the Islamic State. Those are our subjects today on As It Is from VOA. The pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong are mainly about the right to vote without interference from China's central government. That we know. But there are at least two other less talked about issues. One is concern about the rising cost of living in Hong Kong. Another is the widening gap between the city's rich and poor people. Or, as some might say, the haves and the have-nots. Many of the protesters believe political change is needed to deal with these issues. This is the opposite of what Hong Kong's top official has suggested, that democracy would be bad for the economy. Anna Mateo reports.
When you think of banking in Hong Kong, you may not think about food banks, places that give out food to needy people. But that is just what workers at Feeding Hong Kong are doing. The Feeding Hong Kong Food Bank gives away enough food to make 29,000 meals a month. It helps to feed some of the 1 million Hong Kongers living below the poverty line. Gabrielle Kirstein formed the group in 2009. She says Hong Kong is not dealing with issues like starvation, but she notes the number of poor people is rising.
But what we have is one in three seniors. It's one in four, one in five students, children that are living below the poverty line, that are struggling to get three healthy, nutritious meals a day.
The poverty line marks the amount of money you need just for the basics to survive: food, clothing, and shelter. Living below the poverty line means you cannot afford these necessities. Hong Kong's low-tax, business-friendly government has created a busy, vibrant economy. At the same time, it has also created one of the world's biggest wealth gaps. The pro-democracy protesters have been demanding voting rights without interference from China. They have stopped traffic in the city's busy centers. But many say there is a link between democracy and the economy. They say the lack of democracy in Hong Kong is the reason the government has not done more to help the city's working poor and middle class. Fernando Cheung is with the Labour Party and a member of the Hong Kong Legislative Council. He questions whether the city's chief executive can really react to the problems of increasing poverty.
They are not even responding in a positive manner, which it could be traced to the very structure of the political system here in Hong Kong, because after all, the chief executive is not elected by the general public.
Mr. Cheung may have a point. Leung Chun-ying is Hong Kong's current chief executive. He has suggested that democracy in Hong Kong would give too much power to the poor. He said this on the same day the government and protesters sat down for talks to settle the current problem. Councilman Cheung says the chief executive comments do not reflect the interests of the people of Hong Kong. Instead, he says, the comments are more representative of Mr. Leung's supporters in Beijing.
They have a lot of economic interest in Hong Kong, and they don't want their economic interests to be jeopardized. And I think more fundamentally, though, I think it's the central government's distrust on people.
Most of the student protesters are not poor, but they are concerned about rising property prices and stagnant wages. Pro-democracy supporter Jenny Lau says a democratically elected government would do more to address the wealth gap.
If the Occupy Central did make the change, I think it would make that situation better.
But activists like her are not asking for extreme changes. They say democracy in Hong Kong could take steps to reduce the wealth gap without threatening its free market economy. I'm Anna Mateo.
You are listening to The Voice of America. I'm Christopher Cruz. The American-led coalition is beginning to provide weapons and ammunition to fighters defending the city of Kobani in northern Syria. The city is hoping for help from Kurdish militias in the fight against Islamic State forces. One young Kurd has found an unusual way to help the people of Kobani. Instead of a gun, 27-year-old artist Shirzad Ibrahim is using a paintbrush. Jerry Watson tells us about him.
Mr. Ibrahim comes from the mainly Kurdish city of Afrin in northwestern Syria. When he first heard about the battle for Kobani, he went to join Kurds defending the city. But he says he soon discovered that he is not a fighter. So he decided to help the best way he could. He crossed the border to Turkey and began to paint.
The fighter takes up arms to protect people. The writers, they write articles and poetry. And we help by painting for our people.
His paintings are now being shown in the main square of Suruç in Turkey. Some of the paintings are unpleasant or upsetting. Mr. Ibrahim says the work means to show the evil of the Islamic State. That militant group is known locally by the name Daesh.
Daesh's policy is clear. It's all about bombing, blood, shelling, and execution. We draw that, but through our own vision.
He says he hopes the battle for Kobani will end soon.
God willing, not one Daesh fighter will remain. And we go back, and we will rebuild everything destroyed by Daesh.
I'm Jerry Watson.
That's our program for today. I hope it has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. Magic is the performance of tricks. It has been a part of almost every culture in the world for centuries. Magic shows today might include a disappearing act, card tricks, or pulling a rabbit out of a hat. But what could that have to do with health? One American magician goes beyond just entertaining crowds. Kevin Spencer also makes magic to improve the lives of people with disabilities. VOA's Julie Tabo attended one of Mr. Spencer's special workshops near Washington, D.C. to learn how. Kevin Spencer has been a magician for more than 30 years.
I saw my first magician perform when I was 5 years old, and I can remember then vividly telling my mom, when I grow up, I'm going to be a magician.
But early in his career, a bad car accident changed the focus of his work.
The car I was in was crushed by a tractor trailer. I woke up in neurological intensive care with a closed brain injury and a lower spinal cord injury, and spent almost a year in therapy just trying to regain the skills I'd lost as a result of the accident. Solid?
Yes.
What's the magic word again?
Abracadabra.
His accident made him think about using magic tricks as a tool for healing.
We know from research that magic is therapeutic, but we also know from research that all of the movements that are required to perform a magic trick are the same kinds of things that we would be working on in more traditional forms of therapy.
Push it all the way down.
So Spencer started conducting workshops all over the world. He teaches magic tricks to children and adults with disabilities. Mr. Spencer says that magic therapy may seem non-traditional, but he adds many skills needed to perform a good magic trick are used in traditional forms of therapy. Physical movement, thinking, understanding, and social skills are all there.
So we're working on motor skills, cognitive skills, perceptual skills, social skills. And when you're done, you actually have a really cool magic trick you can show somebody when it's all over with.
And that social connection with other people can also help people feel better about themselves and increase their confidence. Liam Shannon is an example. Liam has autism, a brain disorder that can make learning and connecting with people difficult. People with severe autism may also have trouble understanding complex emotions. The 10-year-old boy says that after he learned a few simple tricks, he felt many different emotions.
Whoa, that's so great!
Liam says that after learning how to perform a magic trick, he felt like an old magic man, a wizard, or as he puts it, wizardy. He also says he felt serious, happy, and proud.
It made me feel wizardy, serious, happy, proud. It was great.
Kevin Spencer says seeing kids like Liam come alive during a workshop is better than all the applause in the world. And that's the Health Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
This is Shirley Griffith.
And this is Steve Emper with the VOA Special English Program, Explorations. Today, we tell about one of the world's greatest scientists, Isaac Newton.
Much of today's science of physics is based on Newton's discovery of the three laws of motion and his theory of gravity. Newton also developed one of the most powerful tools of mathematics. It is the method we call calculus. Late in his life, Newton said of his work, "If I saw further than other men, it was because I stood on the shoulders of giants."
One of those giants was the great Italian scientist Galileo. Galileo died the same year Newton was born. Another of the giants was the Polish scientist Nicholas Copernicus. He lived 100 years before Newton. Copernicus had begun a scientific revolution. It led to a completely new understanding of how the universe worked. Galileo continued and expanded the work of Copernicus. Isaac Newton built on the ideas of these two scientists and others. He found and proved the answers for which they searched.
Isaac Newton was born in Woolsthorpe, England, on December 25th, 1642. He was born early. He was a small baby and very weak. No one expected him to survive, but he surprised everyone. He had one of the most powerful minds in history, and he lived until he was 84. Newton's father died before he was born. His mother married again a few years later. She left Isaac with his grandmother. The boy was not a good student, yet he liked to make things, such as kites and clocks and simple machines.
Newton also enjoyed finding new ways to answer questions or solve problems. As a boy, for example, he decided to find a way to measure the speed of the wind. On a windy day, he measured how far he could jump with the wind at his back. Then he measured how far he could jump with the wind in his face. From the difference between the two jumps, he made his own measure of the strength of the wind. Strangely, Newton became a much better student after a boy kicked him in the stomach. The boy was one of the best students in the school. Newton decided to get even by getting higher marks than the boy who kicked him. In a short time, Newton became the top student at the school.
Newton left school to help on the family farm. It soon became clear, however, that the boy was not a good farmer. He spent his time solving mathematical problems instead of taking care of the crops. He spent hours visiting a bookstore in town instead of selling his vegetables in the market. An uncle decided that Newton would do better as a student than as a farmer. So he helped the young man enter Cambridge University to study mathematics. Newton completed his university studies 5 years later in 1665. He was 22 years old.
At that time, a deadly plague was spreading across England. To escape the disease, Newton returned to the family farm. He did more thinking than farming. In doing so, he found the answers to some of the greatest mysteries of science. Newton used his great skill in mathematics to form a better understanding of the world and the universe. He used methods he had learned as a boy in making things. He experimented. Then he studied the results and used what he had learned to design new experiments. Newton's work led him to create a new method in mathematics for measuring areas curved in shape. He also used it to find how much material was contained in solid objects. The method he created became known as integral calculus.
One day, sitting in the garden, Newton watched an apple fall from a tree. He began to wonder if the same force that pulled the apple down also kept the moon circling the earth. Newton believed it was, and he believed it could be measured. He called the force gravity. He began to examine it carefully. He decided that the strength of the force keeping a planet in orbit around the sun depended on two things. One was the amount of mass in the planet and the sun. The other was how far apart they were.
Newton was able to find the exact relationship between distance and gravity. He multiplied the mass of one space object by the mass of the other. Then he divided that number by the square of their distance apart. The result was the strength of the gravity force that tied them to each other. Newton proved his idea by measuring how much gravity force would be needed to keep the moon orbiting the Earth. Then he measured the mass of the Earth and the moon and the distance between them. He found that his measurement of the gravity force produced was not the same as the force needed. But the numbers were close. Newton did not tell anyone about his discovery. He put it aside to work on other ideas. Later, with correct measurements of the size of the Earth, he found that the numbers were exactly the same.
Newton spent time studying light and colors. He used a three-sided piece of glass called a prism. He sent a beam of sunlight through the prism. It fell on a white surface. The prism separated the beam of sunlight into the colors of a rainbow. Newton believed that all these colors, mixed together in light, produced the color white. He proved this by letting the beam of rainbow-colored light pass through another prism. This changed the colored light back to white light.
Newton's study of light led him to learn why faraway objects seen through a telescope do not seem sharp and clear. The curved glass lenses at each end of the telescope acted like prisms. They produced a circle of colored light around an object. This created an unclear picture. A few years later, Newton built a different kind of telescope. It used a curved mirror to make faraway objects seem larger. Light reflected from the surface of the mirror
instead of passing through a curved glass lens. Newton's reflecting telescope produced much clearer pictures than the old kind of telescope.
Years later, the British astronomer Edmund Halley visited Newton. He said he wanted Newton's help in finding an answer to a problem no one had been able to solve. The question was this: what is the path of a planet going around the sun? Newton immediately gave Halley the answer: an egg-shaped path called an ellipse. Halley was surprised. He asked for Newton's proof. Newton no longer had the papers from his earlier work. He was able to recreate them, however. He showed them to Halley. He also showed Halley all his other scientific work.
Halley said Newton's scientific discoveries were the greatest ever made. He urged Newton to share them with the world. Newton began to write a book that explained what he had done. It was published in 1687. Newton called his book The Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy. The book is considered the greatest scientific work ever written.
In his book, Newton explains the three natural laws of motion. The first law is that an object not moving remains still, and one that is moving continues to move at an unchanging speed so long as no outside force influences it. Objects in space continue to move because nothing exists in space to stop them. Newton's second law of motion describes force. It says force equals the mass of an object multiplied by the change in speed it produces in an object. His third law says that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction.
From these three laws, Newton was able to show how the universe worked. He proved it with easily understood mathematics. Scientists everywhere accepted Newton's ideas. The leading English poet of Newton's time, Alexander Pope, honored the scientist with these words: "Nature and nature's laws lay hid in night. God said, 'Let Newton be,' and all was light."
This special English program was written by Marilyn Cristiano and Frank Beardsley. This is Shirley Griffith.
And this is Steve Ember. Listen again next week for another Explorations program on The Voice of America.